Hello, in this audio snippet, we're going to continue talking about America in the post-Civil War period, and we're going to focus mostly on what happened in 1876. But before we talk about that, let's talk about three minor things related to recent events. One thing that we wanted to mention, and it was something that kept getting postponed, but I believe it needs to be said at some point, is what happened with Project Veritas. Project Veritas, as some of you may already know, is this organization that was established by James O'Keefe, a journalist who exposed a lot of scandals through hidden cameras and things like that. And he became a thorn in the side of liberals in America because he exposed a lot of liberal and Democrat corruption. And he started off not having anyone's support, basically funding himself, and he went through a lot of heartache in his life and a lot of economic lack and so forth, establishing this Project Veritas organization. So he was not in it for the money or the fame or the acceptance. He paid a great sacrifice and established this organization. It eventually became a formal. At the beginning, it was just him, but eventually it became this large organization with a board and things like that. It got formalized, and ironically, as it got formalized, that basic as it became organized and successful. That basically led to his own removal from the same organization he started. The last big story that was broken by O'Keefe and Veritas was the story about the Pfizer scandal. I forget the details, but it exposed the fact that it was a hidden video of recording a Pfizer top executive talking about how they were taking advantage of people through the so-called vaccine, and it was big news. It was a big embarrassment for Pfizer, and sadly, you know, that's all it became. There should have been criminal charges following all of that, but people seem to get away with so many things. Even when stories break and everybody knows what happened, it's all left in the air because we are in a now in a country that doesn't live by laws and justice. It's all manipulation, and it's part of the collapse of the country as a society, as a republic. And the thing is that after that story broke, apparently Pfizer wasn't too happy with the huge embarrassment, and they must have paid off somebody. Something happened in that board of directors of that Project Veritas, and eventually they voted to oust him on some, you know, they trumped up some charges, as you know, it's often the case with liberals and people who are anti-truth. They always try to smear the people that they're against, make up some stuff to destroy their reputation, to destroy them as people, and neutralize them. And so sadly, this organization that you would think would be filled with people who believe in principles that are contrary to liberalism eventually got infiltrated, and they made up some stuff about him, or exaggerated some stuff about him mistreating other people. And there might have been a little bit of truth to what they were alleging, but it was clearly blown way, way, way out of proportion. And they decided to oust him in a very hypocritical way, pretending as if they were just reprimanding him or he was taking a vacation, but they were literally removing him or ousting him from the organization. And he was ousted, I believe, around February 10th, between February 8th and February 10th, if I'm not mistaken. And he recorded a video that was intended for private consumption for his fellow colleagues at Project Veritas, but it got leaked, and I got a chance, like so many others, to watch the video, and it was really heartbreaking. He was sharing what was going on and speaking from the heart, talking about his experiences, how he started, and he was criticizing or pointing out the falsehoods and the allegations that the board was making against him. And it all happened coincidentally right after the Pfizer story broke. And so he was ousted, and this Project Veritas lost a lot of supporters immediately, naturally. People who, because this became a very rich organization. So sadly, this man who had struggled and suffered through so much economically, and being attacked, his family being attacked, and all this that he went through, this horrible heartache. And once he got to this point where you would think now he can rest a bit, he's in a stable organization financially and in terms of being established, he should have had a chance to rest and kind of enjoy the fruits of his labor, but instead of that, they threw him out once he made it successful. And I have no idea where they stand now financially, because they lost a lot of supporters when they ousted James O'Keefe, and they try to hypocritically portray it as O'Keefe deciding to leave instead of them ousting him, and so forth. But the point that I wanted to share with all of this is that I found it non-coincidental that this happened, because the word veritas, is some of you may know, literally means truth in Latin. So basically, James O'Keefe named this organization that he built from the ground up through so much heartache and so much sacrifice, visionary sacrifice. He named it Project Truth. He just gave it a fancy Latin name, Veritas. So to me, the fact that he was ousted from Project Truth, it was such a fitting figure of what's happened with the country, because the truth has been trying to speak to the country, to America, over and over and over again. And America has said no to the truth. We will not listen to the truth. And America has betrayed the truth and parted with it. And it's a perfect figure of what's happened to the country. And that's why I believe it's not a coincidence that this happened. And the date and everything is also very fitting. I wanted to mention that. And ironically, this divorce or separation with the truth is not really so much a thing happening with liberals. It's a thing happening with the non-liberals, the people who are supposed to be against the madness of the liberals. As we've said so many times before, the liberals, it was never a question of reaching out to them or having a debate with them and having them reason and come to an understanding. The liberals have never been in search of truth. They don't believe in objective truth. They have an ideology. It's like it's downloaded from the matrix into their brain, and they accept it verbatim. They are religious fanatics. Their religion is liberalism. So they get indoctrinated from childhood and get fed all this nonsense, all this stuff into their brain. And then they just spit it out. And they are trained to hate certain people. If someone says something, then a certain phrase, boom, they are automatically evil. They must be destroyed. You know, it's like they almost, it may sound like an exaggeration, but there's a certain reality to what I'm about to say. It's like, you know, like when the Terminator, you know, in movies, they show some robot or something that focuses on someone, and then you see the letters like screen, like a computer screen saying enemy, enemy, and must destroy. That's how they think when they see someone who's waving an American flag. Oh, enemy, we must destroy this man. This man is a patriot. This man is a right-wing extremist. We must destroy him. Or if someone says something, telling people that black people should be accountable for their actions. Ooh, racist, racist. We must destroy them. And they live in this world of knee-jerk reactions. So with them, there is no debate. There is no debating. They don't think in terms of truth. You can show them the logic and show them the facts, show them this and that, and they don't believe it. And they always take the facts and twist them to fit their ideology. So no matter, you can say, no, he's not a racist, because you can see that he's not a racist because he's done this, 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 this in his life, and it doesn't matter. No. He is a Republican. Ergo, he's a racist. Ergo, we must destroy him. And there is no way of proving them wrong, because they are not in search of the truth. They're not interested in the truth. All they want is to enforce their religion, their ideology, their liberal ideology on everybody else. And anyone who dares to question liberalism, well, must be destroyed, must be ostracized, must be labeled, this, that, and the other, and sent to some gulag and destroyed. They are heartless and merciless and evil, so that you can't debate with liberalism. The liberals are, they don't understand the concept of truth, of objective truth. Truth is what fits their ideology. That's all it means. The ideology is the truth. They take it by faith, like religious fanatics, and everything flows from there. So you can't debate with them. So they were lost to begin with. So the only way to deal with them is to destroy them. How do you destroy them? You transform the environment. You transform the environment and make it unbearable for them to exist in that environment. But you don't do it through fascist suppression, the way they do it to their enemies. You do it in a different way. You transform the environment, and the environment will naturally bring judgment into their lives, into their realms, and destroy them from within. And those who have a chance to escape the indoctrination, to kind of disconnect from the matrix, it's through the environment, but it happens in a way that surpasses sequential logical thinking. I don't know how to explain it. That was the strategy to do this. Like, for example, in 9/11, when the horrible thing happened, I was surprised. I remember, as we've shared before, about I was surprised when we were singing "God Bless America" in baseball games. And it's like, my goodness, how is this happening? Because the country had turned so anti all of that. It was unfathomable to think of a day where the country would not be in an uproar or in controversy about people singing "God Bless America" during a baseball game. But how did that happen? It wasn't that that conservatives went and talked to to liberals and debated about freedom of religion and all these you know, talking points and blah blah blah, and then reaching a conclusion and convincing them, yeah, it's okay to sing God Bless America or anything like that. It just happened. The atmosphere was transformed by that horrible event. That horrible event opened people's eyes for a moment to thinking about things that they were not willing to think about. And it just, it changed the atmosphere. But it was a brief change. And sadly, the stupid Christians, the conservative Christians, especially the matriarchal Christians, the pastors, and all this filth that fills the Christian landscape in America, they took advantage of this atmosphere where people were flocking to churches and seeking God and looking for a higher purpose, a higher calling. And they flocked to churches in ways that that it was almost like supernatural, like something that was not natural, not expected, and something that you wouldn't imagine would happen so naturally. Even though it was not natural, I don't know how to explain this, what I have in my head. But the thing is that they, Americans were flocking to churches, seeking a higher meaning in life and so forth, a meaning they had kind of ignored all this time. And the pastors took advantage of that, said, oh, we have more members to our matriarchal system. And they, welcome. And then they, with their matriarchal stupid false Christianity, they killed the whole movement. And then we went back to the way we were, because these people were flocking into a system that is corrupt, a matriarchal church system that believes in a false God, a God that does not exist. This wishy-washy, effeminate God that these worthless Christians believe in. It's a false religion. It's a false system. But the point that I was trying to make is that in 9/11, we saw how we didn't need to go through visible, natural, logical methods to defeat liberalism. It happened by a transformation of the environment. And you transform the environment, and then you will automatically destroy them. And overwhelm them. It's like a flood that comes in and wipes them out. You don't reason with each one individually, you just wipe them out. And you do that by transforming the environment. And in that transformation, then those who are rescuable from that drone religion of liberalism, you know, begin to kind of wake up and are drawn on their own to seek the truth. It's a left-handed approach, and those who have read the articles on the website where these audio snippets are posted may know what I'm referring to. It's a left-handed approach. It's not a right-handed approach. It's a left-handed approach. And that's why conservatives will never defeat liberals, because conservatives are always, you know, literally they always go with the right-handed approach, because they are on the right side of politics. So everything is from the right. And this had to be done from the left side. It's the side of, the right side is the side of the visible, the logical. The left side is the side of the invisible, of the non-logical. And going non-logical doesn't mean denying logic. At the end of the day, you have to have a foundation of truth of that is based on consistent logic. But even as you're on this foundation of logical truth, part of the truth that you are to be founded on is the awareness of this non-logical element. It's like an intuitive element. I don't know how to explain it, but that's the left side. And the way to remember it is, you know, the right hand is controlled by the hemisphere of the brain that is related to analytical thinking and focusing on the visible. And the left hand is controlled by the hemisphere of the brain that is related to intuition, creativity, artistic thought, and so forth. You know, when you're an artist, you're drawing this, you know, painting. You don't do it with logic. I mean, if you're doing it with logic, what you end up with is a photograph. You're just photographing, you know, what you're seeing and just plastering. There's no creativity involved there. To paint something and have it like be a great painting, you have to like break off from the logical and go non-logical. And you start moving. It's like a flow, like a river where you're just taken and you go with the flow. And that's how you create things from the left side. So the thing is that, and interestingly, as many of you already know, the right hand is controlled by the left hemisphere of the brain, and the left hand is controlled by the right hemisphere of the brain. So it's as if, both sides are intertwined. It's like the right side and the left side. You can't have them like two separate things. They are like intrinsically related to each other, and it's represented in our physical body where our left hemisphere controls the right hand and the left hand is controlled by the right hemisphere. You can't have one without the other. So the thing is that that's how we defeat liberalism, through non-right-handed or left-handed approach that transforms the atmosphere, and the atmosphere becomes like this flood that wipes away liberalism. I mean, after 9/11, it's like, where were all the liberals, all the separation of church and state stuff and all this thing? It all disappeared. And where is all this hatred of America and oh, America's an evil country and all this and all that? It all disappeared automatically because the atmosphere was transformed. But unfortunately, the matriarchal system, and especially the worthless, excrement-filled church, Christian church, just contaminated, saw this as validation of their stupidity, and drew all these people in. And then once they were absorbed into the system, the whole thing died because the system is corrupt. But what we were trying to go to originally was, with liberals, there is no trying to convince them or have them reach the truth, because they're detached from the truth. They're a fanatical religious sect obsessed with liberalism, their religion. So they were lost to begin with. So the quarrel conflict or the problem this country had was not the liberals, it was conservatives. Because conservatives were the ones who were supposedly willing to listen to the truth, but they would only listen up to a certain point. And it's like they were willing to accept half of a truth. And the problem is, as we all know, the famous saying, nature abhors a vacuum. And what happens is, if you only go halfway, in the pursuit of truth, and you don't follow through with all that you have to reach, eventually that other half that you don't fill out with the truth, because you stop pursuing it, or you thought you were satisfied with the half you had, that other half, that vacuum that you leave, eventually gets filled with deception and falsehood. And that's what happened with conservatism. And just as conservatives allowed this other half to be filled with deception, it just opened the floodgates for eventually deception taking over the country, and the deception control liberals to just ruin the country. So conservatives were the ones who said to the truth, hey, we really don't care for you. Thank you very much. We have it covered. We know what we're doing. We have our founding fathers. We have our holy constitution, we have our demigods of our pastors and our church system, and we have our flag and all these things. And we don't need you, Truth. Thank you very much. We got it covered. We've been very successful, haven't we, for 200 plus years. So for crying out loud, our record speaks for itself. We don't need you. Thank you very much. Please get out of our hair. And that's what they said to the Truth. So there was this divorce between the Truth and America. And it's represented in how the Project Truth kicked out James O'Keefe. It was like this divorce. The project that claimed to be for the Truth ended up promoting falsehood and divorcing itself from the founder who put the word Truth in that organization. And so the thing is that, and speaking of divorce, I did want to mention this also. I saw this story on a conservative website, the Gateway Pundit. It was an article by Wayne Allen Root, who appears to be some sort of well-known conservative, one of those patriots, rah-rah-rah, USA, USA type guy. And he was talking about we need a divorce. And he's saying, I've been saying it for 2 years, we need a divorce, we need a divorce. And he started saying, you can't debate with liberals. They don't listen to the Truth. They are unreachable. So he was saying a lot of the things that we've been saying in these audio snippets, that you can't reach them. It's just a fact. Everybody knows that. Or everybody who's paying attention knows that. But what he was saying is, okay, it's gotten to the point where we now have to like be our own island. And he was basically promoting the idea of, we are just going to buy from conservative companies that promote Christian values and the Christian faith and conservatism and non-liberalism. And I boycott a lot of companies personally, a lot of companies that if it's from Amazon or some other place, I stay away from it. I don't go there. So I understand the concept of boycott, but what he was saying basically is that his dream or his fantasy was to have this country of just red states, where everybody's conservative, and then the blue state people, live elsewhere. We can't get along, so you go your way out, we'll go our way, we'll just huddle up and live in this conservative oasis on our own, and let's divorce, let's get separated. But the sad thing about that is that in the midst of him saying that, he's saying, hey, we have the Truth. These people came and ruined the perfect great country that we had, and we just want our great country back. Make America great again. And the greatness comes from the values that we propose, that we espouse. So he's speaking of divorce, sadly, but the sad thing is the divorce has happened between his people, his faction, the conservative faction, and the Truth. That's where the real divorce has happened. But he's not aware of it. He still thinks that his thinking, the conservative thinking, is the salvation of this country, when the conservative thinking is exactly what opened the door for all the damnation that has come. But they just don't get it. And the Truth keeps saying, hey, I'm here. I'm telling you, you just listen to me. You have some good ideas, but you're wrong on so many fundamental things. I'm going to tell you what to fix and how to fix it. And once you fix it, the liberals will be defeated in a heartbeat. But no. Conservatives keep saying, we have the solution. We know how to do it. Thank you very much. Please walk away. So we wanted to mention this thing about Project Veritas and how it symbolizes the divorce between America and the Truth. And we have less than 6 months left, and the country will be dead. And I do have to say that it is. I feel the emptiness. I really feel the emptiness. The country is on its deathbed, and there is no rescuing. There is no hope. It's over. We're just waiting for the when the doctor will says time of death, and you say such and such date at such and such time, and that's what we're waiting for. And in the meantime, it seems like the country is getting pummeled with judgments. All the strangest weather patterns that I don't think I could be wrong, but in my lifetime, I have never heard of such a strange combination of weather events all across the country. Just the weirdest things that have been happening. I had never seen that in my life, and I don't know. Could be wrong, but I don't think so. That this might be the strangest weather phenomenon in the country's history. That the country had never experienced such a weird combination of weather events, the floods here and sudden heat waves and then sudden cold waves, and like California getting pummeled with all this. All these storms and all this flooding and all these like hail and this and that, blizzards in Los Angeles and all this stuff. And then in the South, all these things going on. And to me, it's this kind of a manifestation of how the country is being judged to death and being exposed for what it is, a dying, dying nation. With no hope. And one of the interesting weather events that happened was I wasn't really aware of it because I don't follow regular news, to be frank. There's so much bias and so much other rubbish you have to put up with when you listen to them that it's not worth the effort. It's so uncomfortable to listen to American so-called journalists. It's just annoying. So I wasn't aware of this, but I was flipping through channels, not having anything to watch, and I ended up on the web on the Fox Weather channel, I think it is. I don't have cable, so I just rely on broadcast television, and one of the broadcast channels is this Fox Weather channel, I think it is. And they were talking about all these things, all these weather things, and they started focusing on a town called Rolling Fork in Mississippi. And I said, why are they talking about Rolling Fork? And apparently something very bad happened there. Some big tornado went through the town and just wiped it out. And I said, interesting, Rolling Fork. And they kept talking about Rolling Fork and Rolling Fork. And as they kept saying Rolling Fork, I don't know how to explain this, but it's like I had this vision in my head of this road, like somebody going down this road on this kind of plain. Like imagine that you're in this vast plain, plain, and there's this road in the middle of the plain, of this valley or whatever, and the road is going forward, and then suddenly you see in the distance this fork, like a Y, forming a Y, one going to the left, one going to the right, and you see this fork. And what I saw is like, as if this road and the fork were like a carpet, and someone came and started rolling the carpet, and the fork in it. To the point where the fork disappeared, and all you had was a dead end with, the rolled fork at the very end. If you catch my drift, like this carpet, the Y carpet got rolled back into just a carpet that ends. And that's what I saw. I'm sorry if I'm not describing it too well. It was very simple in my head. I saw it very clearly, but putting it in words is very difficult for me to. It's difficult for me to describe things sometimes, but the thing is, that's what I saw, and I said, "That's America," because It's as if America keeps every time a fork is put in its path. It's as if America keeps saying, "No, we'll go our way." It's like, let's put it this way: it's as if you're on a train, and the train is going on the wrong in the wrong direction, or going to the wrong place. And every now and then, these forks, you know, these I don't know what they call them in railroad speak, but you know, there's these forks where the train could change tracks and go some in a different. On a different track. And America has been offered one fork after another, one fork after another. And America keeps going, taking the wrong fork on the road, saying, no, we'll continue with our path. Thank you very much. And the truth has been offering these forks all along the way. And then we have reached our last fork. And this is the truth that I'm sick and tired of giving you an option, a way out over and over again. And I've been speaking and speaking and speaking, and you don't listen to the people that I'm speaking through. So, the hell with you. I am not going to give you any more fork. The last fork has been taken back. I'm rolling it back. And as you know, even in computer speak, rollback is a term that is used. Like when you do a transaction, you can either do a commit or a rollback. Commit means you commit the transaction and it becomes saved in the database. But if you do a rollback, then the transaction is not committed and everything you did gets undone, and it's as if nothing had been, no operation had been performed. So that's what happened. America got a rollback of the last fork. That's the rolling fork. And this is the truth that no more. No more chances, no more opportunities, no more fork in the road for you. You are done. And this is and what happened to Rolling Fork is a manifestation of what's going to happen to the country in less than 5 months. In less than 6 months, sorry. And interestingly, just so you know, Rolling Fork being in Mississippi, in that part of the Mississippi it's 70% black and 30% white, so it's mostly black. And that it kind of so it's in a sense related to all that we're talking about Black America. In a sense, as we've said so many times, Black America was supposed to be the one on the watchtower telling us about what's lying ahead, and warning the nation about things. But Black America didn't do its job, so that is ha has contributed to the country dying. If Black America had stepped up and done its thing, I think the country would have been saved. I mean, I'm so convinced about that. I could be wrong on that. Maybe it would not have been enough. I don't know, but I do believe that if Black America had done its part, instead of complaining about, oh, we're getting treated like animals, and Black Lives Matter, and we're treated like our lives do not matter, and they kept complaining and complaining, and instead of helping to transform the nation, they stayed selfish and worried about themselves. And because of that, the country's dying. And when the country dies, that will affect Black America too. As the economy takes a downturn, everyone gets affected, especially Black people. So it's like someone sawing off the tree limb that they are sitting on. That's exactly what Black America did. And as it complained about how bad it was being treated, they kept treating each other like trash, like rubbish. And I'm digressing a bit. I'm taking a fork in the road right now, but I just want to mention this. There was this reporter in, I forget, someplace. Maybe Mississippi, now that I think about it. That would be a strange coincidence. I think it was Mississippi. I could be wrong, but there was this news lady, reporter, a local news station, or news show, And I think she was talking to someone, and she said, and I'm not going to, should I say it? I don't know. She quoted something like, Izzle, my blah, 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 Izzle. And the thing is that, I'll just say it. She said something like, Shizzle, my nizzle. And it was like joking with someone else in a conversation or something. And she got fired because of that. And what happened was, and it was shocking to me when I found out about it, turned out that Shizzle Manizzle, my nizzle, it's like a Snoop Dogg quote from some Snoop Dogg lyrics. And the nizzle part is a code word for the N-word. So it's like this bastard son of a bitch, Snoop Dogg, worthless little piece of turd. This turd was basically saying, chill out my black, my fellow black man. That's kind of what he was saying with Shizzle and Nizzle, my Nizzle. So Nizzle is like a code word for the N-word. And a lot of people, even people who are into rap music, didn't, or who liked Snoop Dogg and all that, didn't know. I didn't know. I mean, and I've lived long enough to probably have known, but if it was that available of a piece of information, but I didn't know, and the lady apparently didn't know, but turns out that, you know, that was like no bueno, and so they fired her just because of that, of her saying that, because she, in a sense, used the N-word on the air without realizing it. And a lot of people were outraged about that. But the what saddens me, like the bigger message in all of this, is that it's okay for Snoop Dogg to use the N-word, but it's not okay for anybody else to use it, for white people to use it. And I've always found that very hypocritical, very stupid, for black people to say, we own the N-word. No, no, you don't own the N-word, you son of a bitch. The N-word is it's a term of denigration. It's a term of defilement. And if you use it on your fellow brothers and sisters, you are guilty of the crime of demeaning fellow human beings. I don't give a damn if you are black too. I don't give a damn. You are responsible for your behavior. You're not an animal. You're not a monkey. You're a human being. And as a human being, I'm going to judge you as a human being. And you're responsible. You're responsible for the words you use. And whenever, every time you use the N-word on your fellow brothers and sisters, what you're saying is that you are declaring your own race inferior. You're denigrating your fellow black men and women. You're telling them, accept your inferiority. That's what you're saying with that word. It's like calling your fellow brothers and sisters monkeys. Oh, I can call them monkeys if I want to. That anybody would hear that and say, that's stupid. What is worse, monkey or the N-word? You tell me. What is worse? I'm saying the word monkey. I can't even say the N-word. I cannot bring myself to say the N-word. I don't think I've ever said the N-word. Maybe I have, as I was thinking about it or saying it, like talking about the N-word, but not using it, if you know what I mean. Like, when you're describing something and you have to give it a name and you mention it, but you're not using the term, applying it to someone, if you know what I'm trying to say. But other than that, I really don't think I have ever said it out loud. I don't think I've ever even thought about using it to apply to others in my thinking. That's how loathsome that word is. And I don't just, and there's no justification for any black person to use it. And I've been called the N-word, ironically, by black people when I've confronted them. I remember, I think I've shared this with someone or with the with some of you. Or here in these audio snippets, that I was in New York and I was going into Macy's before I boycotted Macy's, because Macy's came out against Trump in 2016 stupid sons of bitches. And I said, you worthless bastards, I will never buy from you again. And I never have since then. But that was long ago. I think this was 2014, 2015. That's how long ago it was. And I was in New York, and I think I was about to go into Macy's. And for some reason, I stopped outside the door. I don't know why. I just decided to stop and stand there. I don't remember why. But I sometimes feel led to do these arbitrary left-handed things, like just out of nowhere. I feel I have to be here, or I have to do this, or turn left, turn right, or whatever. But I was standing there, and then suddenly a black woman just stormed in, through the door. I was like standing right next to the door. It's this like side door on 34th Street. I think it was between 6th and 7th Avenues, I forget, or 7th and 8th, 6th and 7th, I forget. But the thing is that I was, this black woman just raced in through the door. And then a black man, a young black man, followed her and was about to storm in. And it was very obvious that they were having a fight and he was harassing her. They must have known each other, maybe boyfriend, girlfriend, but clearly there was some sort of, inappropriate relationship there, of some sort of abuse. I don't know how to explain it. But clearly the woman was trying to get away from this guy, and the guy was trying to chase in after her. And when he came in, tried to enter the door, and he was going past me, I don't remember what I said, but I confronted him. And then he stopped, and it's like he turned around and looked at me and stopped following the woman who went in. But what I wanted to do is distract him. That's what I wanted to do. Let the woman give her a bit of a head start into Macy's. And so he looked at me and he said, what's your problem? N-word. And he started confronting me, and I started, going at him. And then eventually, I don't know what happened, but then he burst in through the door and went in trying to, continue chasing the woman. But the exchange happened for like 10, 15 seconds. And he called me the N-word. And this is one example of many times when I've confronted black people on the street. There was this woman who just threw this bunch of garbage on the ground. There was a rubbish bin a few meters away. She could have just walked over and dumped it there. But no, she just threw it. And she was brazen about it. And I shouted at her and confronted her for what she did. And then she came up at me, and she was taller than me because I'm a bit of a short person. And she just was in my face like a thug. And she started calling me the N-word. And so what I'm trying to say is that all these black people who should have been on the watchtower looking out for the rescuing of the nation, instead are at the base of the watchtower complaining about how poorly they get treated by the white man. But they don't care about how poorly they treat each other. The cannibalism that we've talked about in previous audio snippets, they just don't give a damn. And that's why the tornado went through Rolling Fork, a 70% black town, and razed it to the ground. So just as a side note, historical trivia, I guess, the town was founded in 1828 by a fellow called Thomas Cheney, and he was the first European-American settler to reach the area. And there's a creek that flows through the town called Deer Creek, deer as in the animal. Cheney chose the name Rolling Fork because he saw that this creek was, there was a fork in the creek, and he saw the swiftness of the water at the fork. And I guess as the water hit the fork, it would roll, and that's why he called it Rolling Fork. But he didn't realize that he was kind of, in a sense, naming it for the future event so that in 2023 or whatever, someone would be talking about that that rolling fork as a symbol of how the country has been, the last option that we had has been rolled back. And we are now at a dead end, on a dead end road that will end, and there is no continuation. It's over, because the fork has been rolled back. The transaction that the truth wanted to perform with this nation has been rolled back and said, no mas, no more, it's over, it's done. And the fact that this guy was called Thomas is also befitting, because, you know, Thomas, the name, is equated with a doubting person. A person who says, yeah, I'm not too sure, you know. And that's how conservatives kept treating the truth. And those who spoke the truth, the real truth, I mean, the deeper real truth that would have transformed this nation. Oh, yeah, it's interesting, but I'll have to think about it. I'm not too sure. But the sad thing is the Thomas of the Bible, the Apostle Thomas, eventually he believed, and he became a very influential or powerful apostle later on. They say that he eventually went to India, was a missionary there and all that. So the thing is that at least the Thomas of the Bible had a change of heart. He was a doubting Thomas, but he became a full-blown believer. And he was basically the first one to overtly, according to the Bible, to refer to Jesus as God. So he had like this complete turnaround from doubting to like the complete opposite. But America didn't have that. America remained a doubting Thomas. And ironically, now the town of Rolling Fork is filled with Uncle Toms. All these 70% blacks, whole bunch of Uncle Toms. And why? Because they are defending their owners. Their owners are the Democrat Party, run by white liberal elites. So the white liberal elites use use black people to get power, but do absolutely nothing for them. The town of Rolling Fork, Mississippi, full of poverty, full of lack, full of emptiness, for lack of, which is a bit of an oxymoron. But so these are the Uncle Toms. These are the real Uncle Toms who are faithful to their white owner. And the white owner is the Democrat Party and the liberal elite. And I say this because, Rolling Fork is the county seat of Sharkey County. I mean, so it is an important town. It's the, like, you could say the capital of the county. And the county is called Sharkey County. And interestingly enough, Sharkey County was established in 1876. And this is not a coincidence, because I don't know if we're going to eventually get to it, but I'm being very frank with this. I'm not lying. The intent was to talk about the 1876 election in this audio snippet. I'm not sure if we're going to get to it. But the thing is that in that year, coincidentally, Sharkey County was established. This is all connected. Believe it or not, even though it seems like we're going off track, but we're not off track. We're right on the track. But so when Sharkey County was established, Rolling Fork was made the county seat in 1876. And Sharkey County, just like the rest of the Mississippi Delta, is heavily Democratic. They have voted for every Democrat presidential candidate since 1976. So every time, every election since 1976, they have voted for the Democrat. All the Uncle Toms in Rolling Fork, all the black Uncle Toms go vote for their white slave owner, which is the Democrat nominee. So they've done that since 1976. Interesting, 1976, 100 years after 1876. And no Republican presidential candidate has gotten more has reached even 40% of the vote in Sharkey County since Bush 41 did it in 1988. You know, Bush 41, H.W. Bush, the bastard who followed Reagan, the worthless little bastard boy who followed Reagan in the 88, he at least got 40% or broke the 40% number in Sharkey County. And that's the closest the Republicans have gotten to winning, at least in terms of presidential candidates. So it is a country, a place of Uncle Tom's, founded by a Thomas Cheney, who represents also the doubting Thomas, Thomases, who fill the conservative landscape and who are responsible for the fork being rolled back, along with the black people who were not on the watchtower. So it is a white problem and a black problem at the same time, white conservative and black liberals. So that's what we wanted to say about Rolling Fork, Mississippi. And the third thing we wanted to talk about was, before getting to 1876, as the indictment of Trump. It was official this week. A New York City grand jury indicted him and on these fake charges that were brought up by a man called Alvin Bragg, who happens to be black. So this is all related. You know, black America, instead of being on the watchtower, an Alvin Bragg, who is an Uncle Tom, serving the white, his white Democrat masters, white masters, liberal masters, following orders and using his office to indict Trump. And the sad thing about this is that it was a grand jury of New York City sons and daughters of bitches indicted Trump. And that is a figure of how cursed New York City is now. As I've said before in the previous audio snippet, I curse New York. New York is cursed. I own the land. I own this place. And I say that, and people who know what I'm talking about will understand what I'm saying. Because it sounds like a very strange thing to say, but just follow me along here. I own this place. I own this land. And I would rather have it razed to the ground like Rolling Fork, Mississippi, and wiped off the face of the earth, quite clean of all the rubbish that's in there, than to keep it alive and just to be able to say that I own something that is of a certain value. I'd rather have it destroyed. And that's what I have said about this whole area. I'd rather have it razed to the ground, like wiped out, like a tornado coming through and just wiping it all out and killing all the bastards and the whores that live in this part of the world, and have them wiped off the face of the earth, than to say I own, you know, it's like saying, you know, I own a garbage dump, you know. What's the merit in that? What's the pride or the honor in being the owner of a garbage dump? I'd rather have the garbage, the trash, the rubbish just thrown in the furnace and just burned into nothingness. And that's what I have declared for New York City. And it's fitting that this is just confirmation or even greater validation of the worthlessness of New York City and its people. The brave and great people who lived here and who showed their character and their mettle after 9/11, they're gone. That spirit is gone. There's nothing of it now. It's just rubbish. You go to New York City, it's dead. It's dead. And as I've said before, the conservatives go, oh, yeah, well, I knew that from the beginning. You've been living in the belly of the beast, of the liberal beast, and that place is cursed, and all that. And all these conservative idiots who laugh and say, oh, yeah, we know that place is Babylon and it's death. All these people don't realize, as New York City goes, the country goes. When you start saying New York City is dead, you're not just saying New York City is dead, you're saying the country's dead. So you stupid conservative, who starts laughing at New York City and at me for having defended New York City for so long. You don't realize that while you're laughing at New York City, you're laughing at your own house burning. It's like you're pointing at that house and say, oh, it's burning, ha ha ha, look at that hellhole. And you don't realize that behind you, your own house is burning, because what happens to that house will happen to your house. And it's happening to your house, you stupid conservative son of a bitch. So the thing is that the grand jury, New York City grand jury indicting him, is a manifestation of the decadence of New York. And sadly, New York is, I mean, Trump is a New Yorker. I mean, he is a New Yorker. He's now in Florida, but everyone who's ever thought of Trump over the years says, you know, you think of Trump, you think of New York. He is a New Yorker, and his fellow New Yorkers chose to indict him over nonsense. The first ex-so-called president who has ever been indicted of a crime officially. As we've said before, Trump was not a president. We have had no presidents since Bush 43. We've had an imposter, a naive king, and now a senile thief. But there are no presidents. The American Republic died on the 5th of November, 2008. And the country itself and its calling, its promise, and its mantle will be taken away. And the country will die in less than 6 months. But the thing is that all of this is a violation of, as we said so many times, pillar number three out of the 10 pillars of the new American Constitution that we have described and or tried to begin to describe in these audio snippets. The third pillar is, the first five pillars define the nature of authority. And the third pillar says that authority, true authority, does not use its power for vain, for banal purposes of self-aggrandizement or self-satisfaction. And if that had been written into the Constitution, we'd have mechanisms to attack all of this. Now we just complain, oh, Alvin Bragg, you know, Uncle Tom, this Uncle Tom son of a bitch, bastard boy, is doing all this, and we start complaining about this Uncle Tom doing all this to serve his white Democrat masters. But we can't do anything about it because there's nothing in the Constitution to give us grounds to attack that. Again, it's another example of where we see real life scenarios where the Constitution is so lacking, it's so empty and incapable of dealing with everything that the liberals just keep bringing up because we never filled the void. But aside from all of this, it's also a manifestation, like a slap in the face of Trump to make him, the truth is literally bitch slapping him, but Trump is not waking up. But it's the truth saying, hey, you're delusional thinking you can win in 2024. There's no way you can win. There's no way. The system has collapsed. But Trump and the conservatives keep thinking as if the country and the American dream and the American Republic is still alive and we're just going through a phase. And we'll just overcome it in 2024. You know, Trump said, we'll have the greatest landslide in American history in 2024. And this is going to propel us. This indictment is going to propel us to that because the people are going to rally and blah, blah, blah. And I go, what? What? He got the most votes, legitimate votes, in the history of this country in 2020. And he still lost. To a senile bastard who can't bring together five people, even for a basketball game. I mean, if Biden showed up somewhere in a basketball court, I don't think he could get five people to join him. I mean, that's how sad and pathetic the guy is. He supposedly got more votes than Trump, but okay, but whatever. The thing is that Trump is delusional. The system, he's going to be destroyed. Because he does not understand how to beat the system. He thinks, oh, the art of the deal and saying how great everybody is until they stab him in the back. And then he starts calling them names. That's not going to solve the problem. That's not how you fix the system. you have to get to core truth and hear the truth, all these things that the truth is saying. And you have to hear them, you have to implement them, you have to apply them and start declaring them from the rooftops. But he was not interested, so there's no way he's going to beat the system, because this system has to be beaten from the left side. The left is beaten with left-handed tactics in this kind of ironic way, with a right-handed foundation, but with a left-handed strategy of transforming the environment. To transform the environment, you don't have to fight anymore. The environment will automatically wipe them out. But I'm just speaking things that will never be implemented here in this country. It's just so sad. It's frustrating. You know, it's like somebody dying of thirst and saying, I'm dying of thirst and we're in trouble. And you have a thousand bottles of water. Come and drink. No. I don't trust you. I don't know where you're from. I don't know your name. I don't know where that water is from. And I go, hey, you know, I open a bottle and drink it, chug it down. Look, I'm not dead. See, this is real water. It's refreshing. It's full of life. Drink it. Ah, no thanks. We have our Patriot water here. Our founding father water, you know, Samuel Adams and other brands that we trust. But we don't trust your water. Thank you very much. We would rather be thirsty and die than drink your water. And we won't die because we have enough water. Our conservative water will take us through. And they open the bottle, their bottle of Samuel Adams water or whatever, and they chug it down and it's sand. It's all it is. And they go, oh, I just got a bad bottle. Let me go grab this one. And they keep thinking they're going to find water in that reservoir of conservatism. And it's not there. The truth has been constantly saying it. I have the solution. Just come to me. I have the solution. No. And aside from this, you know, there's been this commission that I've been hearing of, and it's a funny thing. I heard, I think the name, Jim Jordan, I think, is his name. And he is Republican, who was placed as the head of a commission in the House of Representatives that was created by the Republicans, called the Commission on the Weaponization of Government or something like that. And I said, oh my goodness, you know, I don't know. It just struck me as another commission or committee. I'm sorry, not commission, but committee, a committee on the weaponization of government. And as we've shared before, the committee system is just corrupt and destructive. And aside from corrupt and destructive, it is futile. So he has this committee on the weaponization of government, and I couldn't care less if you have a committee and you have a chairman and you're acting like you're fighting crime. I mean, stop talking about it's like having a task force to fight crime, but no one fights the crime. But you have the task force, so you can say, hey, we have a task force, we care. So we have a task force to deal with the crime problem. But you're not doing anything about the crime problem. You just have a task force. But what is this committee doing with the Trump indictment? This should be very easy to do. Very easy to, first of all, they should become aware of the fact, hey, our constitutional system, the current system, does not have anything to deal with this sort of situation where the pillar number three is being violated. I mean, these people don't even understand there is a pillar number three. They don't even understand the 10 pillars. They don't understand any of this. Because they're not listening to the truth. So they have no understanding. They couldn't care less because it doesn't fit into, it's like putting a round peg into a square hole, and their square hole is the Constitution and the Founding Fathers. It just doesn't fit. So they just discard it. They have no understanding of it. So this should wake them up to an awareness. We are missing something in our system. We have to fill the vacuum. But in the meantime, while you fill the vacuum, you could pass legislation to override the nonsense that's going on with the Manhattan DA, and deal with it. But again, there's the concept of federalism and all this and all that. But you're indicted. But the indictment is over a charge of campaign fraud over a federal election. So you can't bring federalism and say, oh, this is protected by state rights or city rights or whatever. They could pass legislation to override whatever the DA is doing because the DA has to enforce the law. And who writes the law? The Congress. So if they pass a law dealing with a situation like this, the DA is obligated. I don't care if the son of a bitch, this Uncle Tom boy, is in Manhattan, or whether he's in the federal government or not. If the Congress passes a law, he has to enforce it. He has to enforce it because it's his obligation. That's what the son of a bitch, is paid to do. The worthless little bastard boy, the Uncle Tom boy, is supposed to obey the law. So enforce the law. So they could pass a law that could say, hey, you know, it is illegal to do this, press charges against someone for this, and the other, and override whatever, and force the DA to relent. Instead of just forming a committee in the weaponization of government and talking about it, not doing a single thing. Just like with the January 6th prisoners, they could pass legislation to say, hey, it is illegal to arrest someone for walking into the Capitol building if they were let in by the police. And if they're peacefully marching, none of these people, if they were really doing an insurrection, they would have killed people. I mean, gone in and attacked people and killed some congressmen, and that, then it would have been an insurrection. But they could have passed laws saying, hey, it's illegal to it's against the law to arrest someone if there's video proof that these people were let into the Capitol building peacefully. They didn't break in by storming and with a battering ram or whatever. They could do it, and then they could free all these people up immediately. Well, you could say, well, the Senate wouldn't pass it. Well, go ahead, write the bill, you sons of bitches, write the bill, you little bastards, you hypocrites, write the bill and pass it in the House and force the Senate to deal with it. Bring MacTurtle, the little son of a bitch from Kentucky, the worthless bastard boy, bring him and force him to say no to that bill and force him to give an explanation of why he's against the bill. But do something, but it's not going to happen. And on top of that, all of this also points something out that Trump is not aware of. And we've said this so many times. He should have been fighting for the January 6th prisoners all this time. He should have been parked right outside the Capitol building with a trailer. And he could have, you know, he would always be surrounded by Secret Service. And he'd have this, nice RV or whatever set up with all the luxuries that he can afford being a billionaire, and live there in his RV and be outside picketing all day in front of the Capitol building or in front of the prison where they're being held in D.C. And demand that they be treated fairly and do all these things and try to go in and visit them. And to the point where I think that he would have been arrested and put in prison for this. But he never went there, not even, I'm sure that it must have crossed. I know that in his head, in some dream or some moment of meditation, he must have felt this thought coming into his head. But he said, no, hell no. And you know why? Because he said, if I ever try to do anything overtly in that way to defend outside of, you know, rallies and speaking nonsense at rallies, if I went to concrete actions to do this, to defend these people who sacrificed themselves for me, if I do this, my political career is going to be over because I'm going to be tied to an insurrection. And then they're going to say, yeah, he's the leader of this. He's the one who organized them to enter the Capitol building and attack people and blah, blah, blah. And he would have said, no, I have more chances. I do better by staying off limits and waiting until 2024. I win. And then when I win, I will pardon them. So it's this naive thinking. And he thought, I serve them better in the long term by not sacrificing myself. And that's the problem with him. He never made a real sacrifice of himself as a person. He never understood that concept. And so it's fitting that now it's like that jail cell that he has been avoiding through that would have he would have been in through voluntary sacrifice will now be seems like the jail cell he will be in through an involuntary sacrifice, because now this is being demanded of him, and he is still not willing to accept the sacrifice, because he was being interviewed on the phone by some idiot from, or I don't know if he's an idiot, I don't know him personally, but maybe he is, maybe he isn't, I'm not sure, but someone from ABC, one of the three major broadcast networks in America, he was being interviewed by them, and they have this bias, so I go in my head, why would you be allowing yourself to be interviewed by these people to begin with? Why would you even go there? But Trump, being Trump, was on this call with this reporter, and he was going on about, or Trump was going on about how this is, an injustice, and it's a travesty, and it speaks very badly of the country and all this and that, and he's right and all that. But then the reporter asked him, are you turning yourself in? And the moment the reporter asked that, Trump said, okay, sorry. I forget what he said, but he kind of semi-politely said, I'm not continuing here. I'm done. And he hung up on the reporter. And the conservatives are all outraged at the reporter asking him that question. I find that, I don't know, even if the guy is biased, it seems like an interesting question to ask. Are you going to turn yourself in? Or are you going to, if they want to arrest you, will they have to come down to arrest you? It seems like a valid question. But the fact that Trump got offended real quickly is, to me, a sign that there's something inside of him. It's this reflex reaction. It's like the truth has been saying to him, make a sacrifice, make a sacrifice, make a sacrifice. And he said, no, I can't go for that. No can do. He starts singing the Hall & Oates song. I can't go for that. No can do. And that's why he immediately shut off the call. Because I didn't find the question offensive enough to end the call. I mean, I wouldn't have been on the call to begin with. But being that he was on the call, I would not have hung up on that question. It's a valid question to ask. Are you going to turn yourself in? Or are you going to have them arrest you? Go down to Florida or whatever and arrest you, or are you going to come to New York and you know be handcuffed and taken to jail, or whatever? But it was this knee jerk reaction. It's like the truth had always been saying to him, get rid of Ivanka, get rid of Jared. Oh, but Ivanka's my daughter and I love her. She's so special to me and this and the other. Get rid of her. She's evil. Maybe she's not evil per se, but she is a host for evil. You know, sometimes people are not evil themselves, but they enable evil to be around them and to act through them. And that makes them evil, even though they're not evil per se explicitly, if you know what I'm trying to say. But the thing is that in that sense, Ivanka, the whore Ivanka, was evil. She was the host that brought in the son of a bitch, Jared, that infiltrator who did so much damage from within the White House. And And the truth kept saying to Trump, kick them out, kick them out, kick them out. And he said, no. I'm going to be loyal to my people because I demand loyalty from people. I'll be loyal to people too. That's the mafia way, you know. I'll be loyal to you. You'll be loyal to me. And that's why he was so upset. He is still so upset with DeSantis because DeSantis is daring to challenge him for the 2024 Republican nomination, even though DeSantis got help from him to become governor. So it's like, I do a favor for you, then you do a favor for me. You know, that sort of mafia mentality, the art of the deal. And that's how he still thinks. So it's impossible. This man will never bring restoration to the country. And I believe he'll be dead before the 2024 election. In some way or another, he's going to be dead. He's not going to be the president. I could be wrong. I could be found to be wrong on this. But, he's never going to be president because there are no more presidents anymore. But what I mean is, he's not going to even make it into the White House again as the, quote, president with the title of so-called president. He's not going to make it. And even if it makes it there, he's not going to make any change. You know what would happen if he won the election, if he was allowed to win the election and got into the White House again? You'd have another virus coming out, another disease, wiping out the economy. They would go double down on it. They would impeach him like four or five more times. And they would trump up some more charges against him. And they would destroy him. It would be unworkable because he does not know how to defeat them. He does not understand how to defeat them. It would be a waste of time. And the country would be thrown into another lockdown. It'd be even worse than 2020. And the sad thing is, if Trump ever made it to the White House, then all the conservatives would be validated, and they would say, "Oh yeah, we knew all along. We were following the truth, and we had the truth, and now we're going to get our country back." The hell you are. You're not, there is no country to get back. It's gone. It's over. You didn't want to listen. The fork has been rolled back. And now all we have looking ahead is a dead end. And we are less than 6 months from reaching that dead end. And then the country will be dead. Over. So those were the three things we wanted to talk about very briefly. But I think we have run out of time, and I'm sorry that I really did want to get to the 1876 presidential election. I think it's important for us to, it's important to talk about what happened in that election. It says so many things about what happened afterwards to Black America, and to the Republican Party, and to the country in general. We'll hopefully do that in the next audio snippet. And one thing to remember is that, you know, 1876 is 100 years after 1776, so it's the first centennial of the country. And the fact that this election happened in that centennial and it was such a negative thing was, it's almost like all these signs that have been laid out across our history of where we were heading at the end. So this was a bad omen, that 100 years in, after having finished through the Civil War, we end up with such a horrible situation as what happened with the 1876 election and its aftermath. And one thing also that, sorry, I wanted to mention before finishing this audio snippet, is to emphasize the tragedy of 1874, 2 years earlier. And we had talked briefly about this, but we kind of went a little bit too quickly on it. I just wanted to re-mention that, how, in 1874, in that election, the Democrats took control of the House, and And that was 9 years after the end of the Civil War. The party that had caused the country to be torn in two, that led the country, the party that led to a war that killed 600,000 Americans, more than 500,000 Americans, in the most gruesome war in history up until then. That's how I would describe it, because it was a really, many people consider it, and I consider it, one of the first real modern war, because of the equipment, the artillery that was used, the type of machinery, guns that were used. It was a level of deadliness that had not been utilized or been available before, up until that war. That's why it was so gruesome. And 9 years after that gruesome war, the party that led to all that gruesomeness was reelected by the American people. And they didn't have to stuff ballots to do this. Well, it did have to do a little bit of shenanigans in the South. But that's another story. But even so, the Democrat Party, they won 180 seats to 103 by the Republicans. I mean, it was a domination. And it was like the country saying, we didn't learn a damn thing from the Civil War. We didn't learn a thing. It's like we're going to return to as if nothing had happened, to the way we were, as if everything was normal. And we're going to vote for the Democrats. And you know why? Because of the economy so bad right now, because of what happened with the Panic of 1873 and Grant's stupid mistake of sticking to the gold standard. And the deflation that ensued and all this tragedy that happened. But because the economy is so bad, we're going to vote for the Democrats. And Democrats didn't fix the thing. So it was almost a useless thing. As always happens, when a Republican is voted out, when Republicans are voted out because the economy is bad and are replaced with Democrats, the Democrats never fix the economic problems that led to their election. They just make it worse. But it shows that short-sightedness, that selfishness that of the American people who elected this party of evil so few years after all this evil that had happened in 1874. And then that began to wipe out every gain that had been achieved through the Civil War. Everything just began to get... It was all the gains were eroded from the very beginning because of Lincoln. But the thing is that in 1874, it's like, okay, now it's the beginning of just the eradication of every gain. Because Grant had done a lot to restore or maintain a lot of the gains gained after the Civil War. He went after the Klan, and he allowed... he gave opportunities to black people to be free and relatively free in many parts of the South. So he did a lot to hold the fort. But then when 1874 came along, and yes, it's his fault that the economy was bad, but that was no justification to bring in the Democrat turds who had caused so much damage to the country. And it also emphasizes we brought in the South back into the Union too quickly. Because if the South had not been, the South should have been maintained as a conquered territory until it was clear that they were going to submit to the truth and stop their enslavement of black people. Because even though the black people were officially free, they were still treated as inferior beings, and the South was still resentful that they were being forced to embrace the black man as a fellow human being. And they should have been they should have been treated as an occupied territory. They should have never been allowed into the Union until they completely relented. So 1874 should have never happened. 1876 also would have never happened. But no, Lincoln and all the stupid trash of those days, stupid son of a bitch Lincoln, what a worthless idiot. what a waste of humanity that bastard was. He and the other rhinos of his day made sure that that we were about reconciliation and bringing the South back, because we just want to go back to the way we were. Everybody singing the Barbra Streisand song over and over again. We just want to go back to the way we were. We don't want to learn anything from anything. We just want to go back to the way we were. You know, click our heels and go back to Kansas. That's all we want. Go back, go back, go back to Kansas. We don't want to learn a thing. And that's why the country's about to die less than 6 months from now. Because we still haven't gotten out of that that mentality of just trying to go back to the way we were. So we will hopefully get to the 1876 election in the next audio snippet. Thank you very much for listening.